sound.
Two guys with no credentials.
Reviewing Rolling Stone
500 greatest album.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Sound Logic Podcast. And today we're discussing album number 103 from Rolling Stone Magazine's Top 500 Greatest Album list. This is 3 Feet High and Rising by De La Soul.
Hey, all you kids out there. Welcome to 3 Feet High and Rising.
I'm so glad we got to this one. It's been a joy to discover. I'm learning so many new things, like Sony Walkmans keep us walking. De La Soul can help us breathe underwater. And I know we'll learn more tonight. Well, I've got lots to say. I'm sure that I'll say it, but hopefully this episode doesn't take us multiple hours, because I think we both have enjoyed it a fair amount.
Yeah, I also have a lot to say, and this is kind of, you might not know this just listening, but it, because we'll kind of release everything all at once, but it's just been a bit of a gap between our recording sessions, you know, just the summer's busy, life is busy.
Yeah.
So we've both been able to listen to this album quite a lot because we kept putting off. So just kept, I'm at work and I'm like, okay, what do I listen to? What's next? And it's like, oh, De La Soul. We still haven't done De La Soul. Okay, I'll listen to it again. It's been a lot of fun. One thing, I guess before we start, I think we might have touched on this at the end of our last episode, or maybe in the re-rank, we talked about it, but that this is another of the very few bands that we've seen from this list
specifically. Yeah,
well, I guess between the two of us, so
right,
we've seen the Stones and AC/DC. We saw them together at the same concert, so those we've seen. You've seen U2,
and I mentioned, I think in that re-ranking episode, that I was at Live 8, which featured more artists than I even realized.
Oh, okay, right.
I didn't specifically buy a ticket for them necessarily, which is
okay,
different than going to see AC/DC and the Stones.
And I think,
although I guess they were part of a festival.
There's some other artists that are on the list that we haven't reviewed yet, mm-hmm, that we've seen, like Coldplay.
Yeah,
we've seen John Mayer. I've seen, and there's probably
Fiona Apple's coming up. I've seen her.
You see Fiona
very,
Apple
very
that's
briefly.
Cool.
She joined Watkins Family Hour for an evening. Anyway, we'll get to that eventually.
But 3 Feet, De La Soul.
Yeah,
I saw in 2017, and I don't if I've told this story. Bear with me, but there was a festival in Burles Creek, which is up near, I think, between Barrie and Orillia in Ontario. And that's where they do Boots and Hearts, which is a huge country festival. It's a huge thing in Ontario. You go to, if you're a country fan, you go to Boots and Hearts. It's a big camping, partying, huge thing, just massive. Well, at the same place, they did this thing called the Big Festival, which was apparently a festival in England, and they decided to try it in Ontario. I think it only ran the one summer, but it's supposed to be a combination of music and food. Big Festival. So there were some big acts. I mean, Ben Harper, OK Go, Weezer, the Strumbellas, Winter Sleep, a fun band from Ontario called Dwayne Gretzky. It was like a party cover band, but they play everywhere and they're just a blast. And some local acts too, and then all these different food things, local vendors, and some smaller celebrity chefs. And my wife was, we were there because my wife was invited with a yoga company she worked for, to do a family yoga set in the mornings. So that's actually why we got to go. But anyways, on the Sunday, one of the acts was De La Soul, so we saw De La Soul. So that was
very
like
cool.
really cool, like a band I really wasn't familiar with at the time. Sorry, I should say group.
Well, and you said it was a very family-friendly festival, and they were not terribly family-friendly, which is kind of an interesting twist, because this album, compared to some of the hip-hop groups we've listened to, at least, is very clean.
Yeah, and, it's quite clean.
I don't even think it has an explicit lyric sticker on the front, which most of them do.
They had just finished their second or third song, and it was fairly heavy with expletives. And they kind of looked over the crowd, and like, I don't know if they had an ear or someone came on the stage like, listen, someone just told us that this is a family friendly event, and we didn't really realize that, so we're sorry. And they just kept
going.
That's
hilarious. And just kept doing their thing.
And I think it was just before that, so we'll talk a bit about this. De La Soul is three guys, right? It's two MCs.
You want to just dive into some details? I feel like we need that.
Okay, but hold on. A quick story. It's two guys, like two MCs and a DJ, right? That's three guys in De La Soul. And their nicknames, which we want to talk about. Plug One, Plug Two, Plug Three. So there's two MCs and a DJ. So they're out there, and they're getting ready. And you have fun sounds for censoring curses, right, Ben? Because I'm gonna say verbatim what this guy says. So they're getting ready. They're getting on stage, and the DJ, you know, the Plug Three, he's getting his stuff set up and doing stuff. And there's large puffs of smoke going up into the air. This is before cannabis was legalized in Canada, and they're getting ready. And I don't know if they've done the first song. He says. I love Canada. Y'all got the best weed, man. To the crowd of parents and toddlers who are watching on.
So, just here for the family-friendly food.
You know, there's a lot of people our age who grew up with this. I mean, I wasn't into De La Soul, but grew up with, like, you know, early hip-hop and, right. and rap, old-school rap. Who were kind of like looking around at their kids like, uh-oh. like you could see people like our age like getting into the music, but kind of also being like, is this okay? Anyways, okay. So that's just a little, it was really fun and also very special. And I'll talk about why it was special in a few minutes. Time for details, right?
Let's dive in.
Okay. Okay, so... 3 Feet High and Rising released March 3rd, 1989. This was their debut album. De La Soul, so the three of them are the primary songwriters and also produced by Prince Paul. So it really was the four guys who worked on the album. I don't think there is many, if any, live music recorded. Like, it's all samples.
Okay.
All samples and produced beats, and you know, or like the drum for a song was straight lifted. It's a sample, and they just run it through. It charted well, as we see with some early hip hop, better in the UK. So number 13 in the UK, number 24 in the US, number 1 on the US R&B and hip hop charts.
Yeah.
So interesting. It's certified platinum in the US to date. Couple notes here. So we've talked about some really big albums from like Dr. Dre and Nas, Biggie, Wu-Tang Clan from the early 90s, and gangster rap, right? So in the late 80s, there's a boom in gangster rap, which is gravitating towards hardcore, confrontational, violent lyrics. And with this album, 3 Feet High and Rising, it stood out from this trend by showcasing their more positive style. So you can hear that through the album. It's more playful. It's more fun-loving. It's cleaner. It's almost juvenile in the different jokes and the stories they tell.
Yeah. They do tackle some issues, I would say.
Yes.
They don't hold back necessarily, but it has a much lighter tone.
Absolutely.
And it's not it's not posturing to try and be tough either.
No, and from what I read, like, that was intentional, like, to kind of sort of go, not necessarily go against, but just to be an alternate choice from that. There were 8 singles released for the album.
Wow.
Plug Tune In, Potholes in My Lawn, which is a great song. Buddy, I Know, I'm going to talk about that one. Me, Myself, and I, Say No Go, The Magic Number, and Tread Water. All were released between 88 and 89. I think the first 4 of those were released before the album came out.
Wow.
Which is quite a lot.
Yeah, and a big gap, June and then November and then December, January, like way before the album. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And we've had that happen where people, where a band gets, you know, gets some recording done. They're like, this is great. Let's get this out now. And then they're just not ready. It just takes a while before they're ready, or for whatever reasons, the label or whatever, marketing. There's a couple okay, I'm going to bounce around a bit. So the title comes from Johnny Cash's song, 5 Feet High and Rising. And we'll talk about that samples actually in one of the songs. But I'm going to talk about some samples a little later, because there's a lot of awesome samples in this record. was selected by the Library of Congress in 2010 to be added to the National Recording Registry. Along with the rest of De La Soul's back catalog, 3 Feet High and Rising was not made available for digital purchase or streaming until 2023 due to concerns about the legality of the samples for digital releases, because this is before the time that, you know, you did things with permission or you paid or whatever.
They're not manipulated in the same way. Like, sometimes we listen to a Kanye track and it lists all the things that were sampled, and we're like, I can't hear that. I can't pick it out. Oh, it's because they changed the tone or they changed the pace or
pitched it. Yeah.
Pitched the speed. These are just straight. I really love the song I Know, and I went back to figure out who the sort of guitar riff in the background was from, and it sounds just like it. It's a straight pull. So yeah, it's pretty interesting the way they, and maybe it just has to do with the technology available at the time, or the way DJs were really just pulling from their vinyl collection and putting on a turntable.
So 2023, it's kind of I'm glad we're doing it, or it's, I won't say I'm glad, it's interesting we're doing our review this year, because not only was that did that happen that they started streaming those, all that back catalog, but also unfortunately we lost David Jolicoeur, I hope I'm saying last name, Trugoy the Dove, Plug 2. We lost him earlier this year in February, so he passed away. I think he was 57, not that old. And that's to me why it was special to see them, because they were all there, and he's gone now. So so very, very sorry to hear that happening this year. Kind of the last note I have here, 3 Feet High and Rising uses a sample heavy production style in addition to sampling from funk and soul tracks, as was popular in the hip hop of that era. The album also draws from sources such as doo-wop, psychedelic rock, and children's music. We'll get to that children's music a little later when I talk about some of the samples. Anything else to add for any of your kind of reading as leading up to this?
Thanks for sharing some of that. Especially the style being an intentional counter to the gangster rap movement.
Sure.
I almost found myself wondering, like, if this was just a time before when hip hop was a little bit more innocent. To know that this was in parallel is an interesting dynamic as well. I don't know if you've felt any of this at all while you've been listening to it and enjoying it, but if there's something about our whiteness that allows us to find this music a little bit more palatable because it's not as aggressive as gangster rap. I don't know. That's been in the back of my head here a little bit. And also making me wonder how I would hear rap that comes after this if this was a band that was a group that I was really into, you know, back in the late 80s.
Interesting.
Anyway, those are side tangents for the next time we get to have a beer together, not necessarily for the podcast here tonight.
Well, it is something that we have wrestled with.
Yeah.
You know, but I think in general, a lot of the music that, I can speak for myself, that I've listened to, in general, I just shy away from things that are more aggressive, more violent in any genre. So from a lot of the hip hop, especially some of the more popular rap was gangster rap in the 90s, early 90s. It did have a lot of those elements. And so I don't think it's because I didn't like the genre. I just don't like that type of songwriting, storytelling, lyric writing.
Yeah.
In any genre. It just so happens I don't listen to the other genres that have that at all.
Yeah, you know, right.
Some of the more aggressive, you know, metal or whatever, right? So,
Well, that helps soften my white guilt a little bit, but
I guess so. Well,
yeah. I hear what you're saying. Yeah,
there's a cultural, like there's in some of that, as talking to some of our guests, in some of that anger and violence, even there's things to relate to. If you've come from a similar place, if you've grown up in a similar place, I'm white and I grew up in Canada. So
right.
Those are two things that I don't have in common with the people writing a lot of that music.
But in fairness, they do actually speak about elements of societal division and injustice in their music. It's just done in a bit more of a more palatable way. It's not as aggressive.
Palatable for us.
For us, yeah.
That you say palatable, but for other people, that gangster rap is palatable.
There's a release in the same way that metal is a release for suburban white kids. You know, like I guess I wonder if there's some intentionality in that emotion and feeling. It's not meant to be more palatable.
palatable is totally subjective, right?
Like, that's true. That's true. Yeah.
It just has to do with, in this case, us and what we're comfortable and familiar with. But anyways, you're right. Yeah, maybe something else to talk about over a beer.
Well, yeah. And I did what I often do when I'm really intrigued by an album. I looked at what my social media circles have said about it. And a lot of my friends have listed this album as one that was very significant for them. But I was surprised at how many of those folks were white dudes like us for whom this music was really significant. And, you know, maybe that was part of the reason that I thought, this is interesting. You know, what is happening here, and that this is making an impact in people's lives. And it doesn't necessarily seem to correlate in the same way that sometimes hip hop does with race or ethnicity in the same way.
Well, we've also talked about a big shift in hip-hop music as you get into the early 90s.
Yes.
And the albums we've reviewed so far from the 80s were generally, as you said, ones we enjoyed more. Public Enemy, Takes the Nation a Million, Sold Us Back, Paid in Full by Eric B. and Rakim. So, there is a shift to away from something that you and I enjoyed a little more.
Yeah.
But that's just us.
And we're still learning.
Of course we're learning. And it's been great to have, we've had guests for a lot of those albums, which have been really helpful in helping us, just understand this better. So Let's move on to the album artwork, which again really, I think, emulates kind of what they're doing in this album. Okay, so much about this album and everything on it is about three, right?
Yeah.
It's all about the number three. De La Soul, three words. There's three guys, 3 feet high and rising. On the album cover, it's very colorful, but it's so much about triangles. There's triangles, three sides, it's all triangles. Everything's divided into three. So the three guys, like, they're, it's like the camera's on the ground and they're looking down at it. The camera's looking up. So they're looking down. It's their faces kind of rotating around. And then in a circle around them, kind of in between their faces, De La Soul, 3 feet high and rising, in very cartoony bubble letters. The O in Soul is a peace sign. In between each of their faces, there's a flower or a star, very cartoony. The images of the members are in black and white. But everything else, the background is bright yellow, and the letters are colored in with green and pink, and there's orange and blue in the flowers that are colored. So it's got almost a psychedelic feel to it.
Yeah,
Soul, right? There's just, and it's very playful, very fun, very juvenile. As I said, like it's like a little kid doodling in school. With the flowers and the stars and all this stuff. So, again, look it up. If you're not familiar with the cover, look it up. It's a pretty fun, playful cover. And I think it emulates the music. And they do look kind of pensive. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say serious, but they also don't look silly or fun. Like, they're not really smiling. They've kind of got just kind of neutral looks on their faces, so you almost get the sense that they're also kind of thoughtful and intelligent, and their lyrics are incredible, like just really thoughtful, really creative, yes, playful, but not unintentional, you know, like not frivolous, not just kind of thrown together. It's well crafted. So I think for me personally, this album cover really fits the album very well.
Yeah, agreed. It has some kids music. I mean, it's kind of funny. Jack Johnson also has a cover, I guess you would call it, of Three is the Magic Number that he did for the Curious George soundtrack, which is also a yellow cover, very bright, poppy. Obviously features Curious George and not three hip-hop artists, but there's some similarities there in a children's cover to this, and yet there's more going on here. There's some intensity, like you said, in the way that they are staring into the camera lens, and it does border, especially with the peace sign, in some of the sort of hippie or psychedelic kind of culture as well too. So it's an interesting kind of juxtaposition of a number of different things.
You're mentioning Jack Johnson. I'm dying to dive into some of this stuff. Was this entirely brand new to you?
I don't know. I think The Magic Number sounds familiar, and so does I Know, but I don't know if The Magic Number is familiar because I'm familiar with Jack Johnson and Schoolhouse Rock, or because I've actually heard the De La Soul song. I don't know too if I Know is just because that song pulled me in so quickly that it felt familiar, or if I've actually heard it before. It's definitely not an album I've ever pressed play on before, so I'm not sure where I would have heard either of those songs. But yeah, no, it's pretty new to me. How about you?
So, no, first of all, I never listened to the album. The one that was familiar was Magic Number. And the first time I heard that was the Jack Johnson, because that came out like in the mid 2000s.
Right.
And we got, and you and I are both Jack Johnson fans, and we got that album. It's really good. But I didn't know. I didn't grow up on Schoolhouse Rock. I know it now, but I didn't know it at the time. So I then heard Schoolhouse Rock, the original version, later. And then I think the first time I heard Three is a Magic Number by De La Soul was at the end credits to Spider-Man No Way Home.
Oh.
Because I remember seeing that movie, and then the end credits start, and they start with that. And because there's the three Spider-Men in that movie, they play three, and there's all these different drawings.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So they play that, and I'm going, what version is this? what is this? And I looked it up. I was like, oh, it's De La Soul. I didn't know. So that was actually I'm a little embarrassed to say, but that was only like, what, 2 or 3 years ago that movie came out? So that was like the first time I heard this version. Other than that, it's all new. Now, I'm dying to talk about different samples. Are we ready for that?
Yeah, let's dive in.
Okay. So, The Magic Number, which is, the second, after the intro, it's the first song on the album, right? So, the whole background, the whole music and everything on this song is by Three is a Magic Number, which is by Bob Dureau, who wrote Schoolhouse Rock. If you don't know Schoolhouse Rock, in the 70s, Bob Dureau, who was a well-known jazz musician who wrote like Devil May Care and I'm Hip and a bunch of other cool jazz stuff, if you're into jazz, he got together with some producer and he's trying to find ways to make education a little more fun. So he came up with Schoolhouse Rock. So Three is a Magic Number. You know Conjunction Junction? You know that one, Ben?
Yep.
Conjunction Junction, what's your function? Hooking up words and phrases and clauses. So that's a good one. There's other ones too. So this whole series, Schoolhouse Rock. So the whole backbone of this song by De La Soul is really Three is a Magic Number. Okay? It also got... near the end, you get the lyric. You can hear near the end of the "How high is the water, Mama?" And that's from Johnny Cash's song 5 Feet High and Rising. How high is the water? 5 Feet High and Rising. But they put in three there, so 3 Feet High and Rising. So you get that sample also in this song, which is also the title of the album. Okay, so that's the first one. And the thing about a lot of these samples, a lot of times, you mentioned it, a lot of times when we hear Conway, it's hard to hear the sample or like to really pick out. For a lot of these, I was hearing the song going, wait, I know that. What is that behind it? So I was able to figure out some of these. So I Know, you mentioned, is one you really liked. I Know. Did you know right away where some of that sample was coming from?
No, I didn't.
But you looked it up?
But I looked it up.
You looked it up. So there's many elements from the song Peg by Steely Dan from Asia, which is an album we reviewed not too long ago. The bass and the horns, especially in the chorus, are from Peg, which was so awesome. And then the whistling is from, they got this whistling riff. I think is the one. That's from Sitting on the Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding.
Actually credited at least in iTunes. Yes. I think
Fagan and Becker are credited as well.
Okay.
In that. And you mentioned, I can't remember, but there is that guitar riff at the beginning, which is not from Peg, it's from another artist. And the last one I want to talk about, there's tons of awesome samples out, but I was listening to Say No Go and got about partway through and I went, wait, I know that song. The song that they sampled in the middle of that is I Can't Go For That by Hall & Oates. And Hall & Oates is kind of a guilty pleasure of mine. I think they're just great.
When you're out on your yacht.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. What's a cruising? Cruising in a Trans Am or something. Kind of an 80s car. Did you pick up on the Hall & Oates in that one too?
I don't know that I did.
Go back and listen to it because you can hear they pull in some of the lyrics. I think you know how they in the song that he goes, I can't go for that. No can do. And they move some of the words around to make it say no go, which is pretty great. Anyways, those are ones that kind of jumped out, and it's funny that there's a lot of music that I listen to now that's older than me and older than this, you know, that I'm listening to now that's all sampled in this music, this album from 89, and the music's from, you know, the 70s and earlier, right? So, I mean, it's first of all, it's just really cool. Second of all, it's really fun. Third, it's really good music. And fourth, their emceeing and their rhymes and their lyrics are just awesome. So,
well, and I found that because they're using actual tracks from other artists for their instrumentation, that it sounds a lot like the Beastie Boys are like a hip hop band that's actually playing instruments at times, because the drums sound real. They don't sound like they're using a drum machine. They sound sampled from something, from an actual drummer.
Right.
It's an interesting kind of way to do. It feels almost like it was done out of necessity, because that was how hip hop was being created in that time, not by a producer kind of creating sounds in the studio. And so it's almost quaint in a way, but it's really, 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 I like it more. Maybe I wonder if that's another part of what draws me into it, is that there sounds like there's some real instrumentation, because there is on a lot of these songs.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Oops, sorry.
I was into a band in college for a moment called the Gym Class Heroes that tour with a, I think they're also a three piece, but it's like a hip hop band with guitar, bass, and drums.
Cool.
I think they maybe have an MC as well that did some stuff with turntables, but it was really fascinating. I got to see them just live at a festival one time and was sort of blown away by what they were capable of doing, kind of the reverse way, mimicking studio sounds with a live band. And and this is kind of the opposite of taking live taking studio music and making it into the background tracks.
So that's just some of the samples, just some of the ones that jumped out to me, some that are fun. There's tons more, and tons. Some that are, you know, deeper pulls that are awesome, but I'm just less familiar. So just super, super fun. And I want to say, seeing them live in 2017, you know, 18 years after this came out, their image had changed in my opinion, had changed a little bit. You know, they looked a little more adult, a little more mature. You know, obviously, you know, the hairstyles are different. They're a little older. And the lyrical content, as we talked, was a little more, was less PG, a little more cursing. But that fun and playful nature was still there, for sure. It was a fun set, Ben. It was a total blast to see them. People were up dancing. You know, they recognized that they were a little out of their element, but they had fun with it, and they didn't really seem to let it faze them. And I became you know, I didn't go out and get all their albums, but I did become a big fan and have a ton of appreciation for them. That it was kind of a weird bunch of musicians. You know, you had Ben Harper, you had Weezer, you had OK Go, you had a lot of more blues and rock, and then you've got De La Soul kind of plunked in the middle, and they just rolled with it like they were great. So I definitely, going back to this album, could kind of tie that to my experience seeing them, really knowing nothing about them. Like I didn't do, you know, there was a bunch of acts. I didn't go out and listen to this stuff. I didn't listen to De La Soul before I saw them. I was like, who's playing this afternoon? Oh, De La Soul. I think I've heard of them. We'll see what that's like. You know, like it was like nothing. It was just super fun. Before we go too further, we've talked about music. Before we talk about it too much more, let's pick our favorite tracks. Quick reminder, and if you're new, go to Spotify, search SoundLogic Favorites, and you'll find a quite large playlist now. We pick two tracks for each album we review. Ben, I'll let you go first. I think I know your choice, but why don't you?
Should I maybe keep it I for you?
Well, I don't know. I'm making an assumption, but...
let me think here.
What's your favorite?
That's awfully kind of you to let me go first, because I know we're both drawn to I Know. You know what I'll pick? That line that I began the episode with... Sony Walkmans keep us walking. De La Soul can help you breathe. When you tread water is from Tread Water. And I don't know why that song is a weird one, but I think it's one of those songs that gets kind of trapped in my head. And so as long as you are planning to pick I Know, I will pick Tread Water.
I'm not.
Oh, okay. Then I'll go back and change mine to I Know, because it is the song that I like the most from this one.
it's so fun. It's such a fun song. It is definitely one of my favorites.
Okay. But not the one you're picking. Oh, interesting.
No,
okay.
I've got a lot of favorites, and I thought about picking I Know, and I like Say No Go. I like Ghetto Thang and Change and Speak. So many great songs. I'm going to go with Magic Number. It's just, to me, embodies so much about this album.
Mm. Oh, yeah, good point. Yeah.
I also really like I Know because it makes reference to a bunch of other songs that have already come on. It makes reference to Jennifer. It makes reference to, says something about, you know, two is a magic number. speaking about, you know, a relationship, right? So I Know is really great, but I'm going to go with the Magic Number. It's just, it's so much fun. It's nostalgic for me because it's got, you know, the Schoolhouse Rock thing. Even though I didn't grow up with it, it reminds me of that kind of, just going back and watching some of the animation that went with that. It reminds me of kind of Sesame Street. And,
yeah.
But it's such a fun track. So that's mine.
Perfect. This one has caught me by surprise, and when we started this project, I expected this sort of thing to happen more often, but I don't think it has. I think I often have a sense of what I'm going to like and what I'm not going to like too much. So to get to an album I knew nothing about and be really touched by it, I think it's been really cool when that's happened, and to have it happen here again with this one is really cool.
Yeah, I did want to touch on one more thing before we kind of move to the next part here. When we get into kind of the 90s rap, we talked about gangster rap, we talked about the violence. The other thing that we see a lot more in that 90s hip hop and going on, and even into, you know, into Kanye West and Kendrick Lamar, is the explicit sexual content. Mm-hmm. That comes up. And, you know, we had a great conversation with Daryl Foster before we talked about To Pimp a Butterfly, because we asked about kind of, you know, the explicit sexual lyrical content of that album and many other albums. And he kind of walked us through, you know, what some of the meaning there. And that's the only thing. There's one or two tracks, you know, there's one skit on this album and then another skit or track that you start to hear some of that you really didn't hear much. Like, you didn't really have it in, for example, Takes a Nation Millions. Didn't really have it too much in Paid in Full, I don't think, really at all. We listened to Low End Theory, which is like 91 or 92. And again, you get this the political social commentary, but not too much of the violence or really aggressive, not too much of the sexual. Yeah, a little bit, but really not overtly. And then you get into some other stuff that's quite sexual. So that was the only thing that, again, I wrestle a bit with. It's just kind of very in your face. But again, it's culture. It's a reclamation of something that, you know, a whole culture was told, like, you can't embrace this part of who you are.
Yeah, well, and when it is included here, like, the song Take It Off almost gets kind of humorous.
Yes, yeah. Again, there's still, you're right, there's still that playful nature, but again, yeah. You're starting, and this isn't negative necessarily, but you're starting to hear the evolution of this genre, right? And we hear kind of
even
where
the sort of segues between songs too.
Yeah, some of the skits
continues
are,
on.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. So, anyways, that's the only kind of
interesting,
I wouldn't say negative, but one challenge I have with it. But in general, such a fun album. Great music, great production, great lyrics, just chef's kiss, A+, thumbs up, everything.
Well, I can't wait to see how it ranks.
Okay, so what has aged well?
Yeah.
And what has not aged well? Okay, so what do you think, Ben? Do you want to kick us off here, or do you want me to kick us off?
Well, it's so amazing that it's just recently been available for download and streaming because of that dynamic of how many things are sampled and sampled quite literally. It, like I mentioned earlier, it almost feels quaint because of that dynamic. And I think that does date it somewhat. I think you have to be a bit more careful with how you use other artists' music these days. And so for that reason alone, maybe it sounds a little bit dated. I think that just stylistically, it sounds like earlier rap too. But I think there's still probably artists that are trying to emulate that sort of laid back, more fun style that they have. It's not as heavily, like, it's more sampled than it is produced. It doesn't sound like a Kanye album where, like, a whole bunch of things have been layered on top of each other. It's pretty stripped down, and maybe that in itself, even though I'm sure there are artists still doing it, does date a little bit as well. So, it's not like I'm listening to this thinking about how old it is, but it certainly has a vibe of another era while I listen.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I think what's aged well is kind of the, again, the fun nature of it, the samples, like, still people are using, you know, jazz and funk samples, you know, listen to, like, again, to talk about Two Pimp Butterflies, also that Kanye pull samples from everywhere, stuff you've never even heard of. So, you know, that's fun. I think the lyrics themselves, I think, hold up pretty well, are pretty fun. A couple things that I don't think have aged that well, the rhythm and delivery of the lyrics. Again, you said it feels like from another time. I think, you know, modern hip hop, even to the mid 90s and beyond, has changed a lot in the delivery of the lyrics, and the rhythm of it. So that kind of put as a younger hip hop sound.
Yeah.
In terms of the age of the genre, younger, right? So that is the one. And I wouldn't even say that, as you said, that it hasn't aged well. It just, it right. ages itself. Like, you can tell where it's from. It's not yeah. timeless in the same way that other things where, you know, you could put this in any decade and it would fit there. This, you can kind of tell where it's from. That's not necessarily bad. And I'd say the only other thing is that we listen to, you know, I think a lot of hip hop in the mid 90s was sampling older hip hop.
Yeah.
you get a lot of hip hop that's using hip hop as a background. And so yeah. you don't get that here, obviously, because it's, you know, there's not as much to pull from, right?
Right.
But we had, I think we listened to like a Nas song that had been sampled like 900 times in other hip hop songs. Something like that, right? So right. so that's the only other thing. Again, that would be kind of an insider thing. You can't necessarily hear that, but just something that now I think more hip hop is being sampled in hip hop, which is not their fault.
Right.
Yeah, but I think, you know, I think you could play it at a club or a party, and I think I think it would still be a big hit. I think it'd be fun. Contestant number three, do you have the answer? Even if I was the only one who thought it was fun, it'd be fun. And now for my next number. Okay, so do you want to move to perhaps the most famous the ranking? So was it yeah. Sound Logic, the question of the podcast? Number 103. You want me to go first?
Yeah, go for it.
You went first last time. I'll go first this time. I struggle with this a bit because on one hand, I really like it. Like, I like it a lot, a whole lot. In terms of how much I like it, I probably want it a little higher. But I struggle again. We struggle just a little bit of ignorance, lack of education on my part in knowing just how much, just who this has influenced. Okay. I feel like I could hear more of Public Enemy in the hip hop that came, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years. You know what I mean? So yes. like that I understood more than I understand this. That's not to say it's not true. It's just, I understand. And maybe that's why Public Enemy is like, Takes a Nation was, I don't know, 20 something on this list. And this is 103, because it's more obvious or had more of an impact or whatever. But I think that, so maybe that's why here, but I think in terms of early hip hop, in terms of a band that they were touring, I don't know, I think right up until recently, until, you know, Trugoy was ill.
I
think, you know, so they've still been in the mix. They've still been relevant. Maybe not one of the top, right. always a top, like a perennial top hip hop act, from at least from a outsider's view, but always a part of it. So I mean, yeah, I guess 103 is fine. Like, I wouldn't want to drop it down lower. I don't see right. any need to that. If anything, I'd bump it up a little more because it's okay. a really good album, in my opinion.
I was all set to say this should be a whole lot higher, but
okay.
hearing you talk about its influence in others, yeah, it does make me pause a little bit. The reason that I wanted to bump it up higher is I mentioned my social media searches, and a lot of the posts right. that I was seeing from friends were sort of, what are your top 10 albums? And that's where it was showing up, was people listing it among their most influential, most important albums in their life. And you know, a lot of kind of music nerds, like people who we've had as guests on this podcast before, were listing right. it. And so there's something about its impact in those who care about music being made that makes it really significant, and makes me a little surprised it's down this low when I sort of poll yeah. the people I'm interacting with anyway. But yeah, I don't hear people talking about De La Soul today in the same way that they're talking about Public Enemy or Wu-Tang Clan or some of the other music that came out around this time. But I think for those who love it, it is really, really special. Almost makes me, like you mentioned, A Tribe Called Quest and our experience with that one. Almost makes me feel a little bit like that, like this kind of hidden gem from another era that those who discovered it just think it is the absolute greatest thing in the world. And, and for a lot of people, it is just unknown. So maybe this is talking myself into maybe just feeling like this is an appropriate spot for it. I would like it to see it a little higher just based on my own personal enjoyment, but probably makes sense to have it around here.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think it's been sometimes you just come across something you just really like, and that's, I think we both experienced that here. We've listened to other things that are the opposite, where it's said to be, you know, super influential and some people like it, and you and I listened to it and went, it's happened so many times as we've been doing this, Ben, to just coming across something that's just really special, and I think this album's really special.
Well said.
Of course, we always like to talk about if there are other albums by this artist on the list. Good news is there's one more. On the previous versions of the list, this was the only album that was there. It was way up in the 300s on the other three versions, but it was represented. Bumped way up, almost 250 spots. And there's one other album which was added to the 2020 list. This is at number 228. This is 1991's De La Soul Is Dead. So in a few years, we will get to talk about
discuss their demise.
Yeah,
when they all died.
Come on, too soon, man. That's about it. Anything else? Final comments? Last words?
Oh, it was fun.
That was great fun.
Yeah.
And again, we say this before, but you know what? If you haven't listened to it, obviously we got some music playing in the background here, but if you haven't listened to this album, check it out. You know, there's a lot of tracks. I guess we didn't talk about that. A lot of tracks. I think about 24 tracks or something like that. And of course, a lot of those are skits. We didn't talk about this, but just the first skit is kind of, it's a game show. And they ask the contestants, you know, you've got to answer these four questions, and they're ridiculous questions, like how many feathers are on this kind of chicken, or like it's just ridiculous questions. And so they keep cutting back to, you know, between the songs, you know, contestant number two, do you know the answer? My cousin was here, he knows this stuff. I don't know, you know, just again, really funny stuff. But check it out. Check out 3 Feet High and Rising. A ton of fun. And Ben, why don't you tell us what we got coming up next week?
Next week, we've got an album for those of you who like quirky LP covers. We have Sticky Fingers by the Rolling Stones, which is known for having a zipper built into the album cover. So I'm sure we'll talk about that, and maybe even talk about some music, although I don't know, I'm sure it's 4/4 timing and rock and roll as they used to play.
Dear,
we'll have fun with it, I'm sure. It's an album that you recently picked up year or two, right?
I did. My zipper on the album cover does not work, and I think many people who have the album have it just starts to corrode, and so I don't know if I can get it working again, but no, my zipper is totally stuck on this
That's
album.
Funny.
It is there. It is there. It's a real metal zipper. Until then, we hope you continue to be well. We hope you take care of yourselves and those around you. Certainly, we hope you'll join us next time, right here on the Sound Logic Podcast. Thanks, Ben, and thanks everyone for listening. If you like what you hear, subscribe on your favorite podcast app and write a review.
Send us a message at our Facebook page, on Instagram, or through our SoundLogic Podcast Twitter feed. Thanks for listening.